Well, it's a real treat for me today because we have special guest today. My sister, my favorite sister, my only sister, and her husband Kevin, and their daughter Jacqueline sitting beside my daughter Melissa. It's very rare that we have a Canadian champion athlete with us. Jacqueline is key player on the Carleton Raven women's basketball team that won the Canadian championship last year. They came into London Friday night and destroyed the big bad Western team. And then last night in Windsor had a great victory there. Not only is Jacqueline a great basketball player, but she's one of the best riddlers and one-line people I know. She's got great delivery, so I won't do justice to some of the one-liners Jacqueline shared with me last night. But let me just, to ease into the message, give you some of sampling of Jacqueline's one-liners. Have you ever swallowed a clock? Well, if you say no, that's a good thing, because I understand it's quite time-consuming. This is a slow crowd, Jacqueline. This isn't like the Carleton people. We're pretty slow around here in London. What do you call 500 bunnies hopping backwards? A receding hairline. Did you hear about the weasel who walked into the restaurant and the server asked the weasel what he would like to drink? Pop, goes the weasel. And a final one for your enjoyment. Did you hear about the guy who lost all functions on his left side? Well, he's all right now. So we've only got one direction to go in this sermon. My title today, ironically, is Walking with a Limp. Now, some of you have noticed that the last couple of weeks I've been disabled a bit with a sore knee, but it's getting much better. Somebody said to me the other day they were worried that I was going to get too much sympathy and become a bit of a wimp because of it. You've never lived in my household. There's no such thing as too much sympathy. In fact, last night, Heather and the rest of the family were busy mocking me. Not a good thing. Actually, there has been a fair bit of pain and discomfort and frustration with it, but there were a few perks. So when we traveled down, or I traveled down last weekend to Ryan and Nu's wedding, flying by plane to Ottawa early Friday morning, the stewardess insisted that I take two seats. And on that crammed plane, the only person with two seats was me. And then when I was embarking the plane, they insisted that I get wheeled into the main airport. So an attendant came out with his wheelchair and wheeled me into the airport. And then he told me that the arrival section is quite a distance in the Ottawa airport from where I had embarked. And so they got an older woman, she had to be 60 or more, and this woman wheeled me through the airport. I felt like royalty, you know. I wanted to wave my cane like a baton as we were going through the airport. And then I meet up with Ryan and Anu, and Ryan insisted that he go and get their vehicle and bring it right down to the front so I didn't have to travel too far. And before I could stop her, Anu, now, usually the bride is to be pampered on her wedding weekend, but here's Anu carrying like four of my bags into the car. I thought that's very appropriate on a wedding weekend for the bride-to-be. Well, the question that I've been asked a lot over the last 2 weeks, it was asked by some of you this morning, is simply, how did it happen? You need to know that we had some coyotes attack a few days ago, and I defended Heather and the family and ended up injuring my knee. The truth is, I tweaked it while walking with Ron Burns in the mall. That does not sound that elegant or elaborate, but that's the reality of what happened. As I said, fortunately, I do believe that it's improving. Jacob is the person we've been studying over the last number of weeks. And after we look at chapter 32 and the events recorded there, we're going to discover that for the rest of his life, Jacob walked with a limp. And I'm sure his family and others would ask Jacob the question, Jacob, how did it happen? Why did it happen? Why, after the events of Genesis 32, would Jacob walk the rest of his life with a wimp? Now, last week, Sean made reference to the fact that the Christian life is a spiritual journey, and some of you seem to be skipping along. Some of you seem to be running with passion the Christian race. I must admit that some of us might be racing aimlessly. Life seems out of control. We're overwhelmed by stress and busyness. But my observation is that some of the most mature Christians I know, some Christians I know who seem to have it all together spiritually, walk the Christian walk with a limp. In Genesis 28, we discover the record of Jacob's conversion. We looked over the last few weeks at chapters 29 to 31, and we see this process of sanctification or growth or the maturing of Jacob's faith, and he's making very slow progress. Before we're too critical, it's kind of a lot like you and me. And we may wonder, what's God's role in all this? Because in Philippians 1:6, we read, he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion. That's a promise for every believer. Or Romans 8:28, all things work out for the good for those who love the Lord. And we discover that God works it for the good by conforming us into the image of Christ. And for my reading of Romans 8, our God is very involved in the process. Last week, Sean asked the question, where is God in your journey? And my question this week amplifies that question. Where does God fit? Where is God in the process of bringing you to completion, growing and maturing you in the faith? And I would contend today that you and me, all of us need a defining moment in our journey. All of us need a Genesis 32 experience. Or if I was to be a little more specific, we need a Peniel experience. We'll discover what happened at this place called Peniel, and we'll discover that this is a real key, for there are insights and lessons for all of us when it comes to the spiritual journey. We have been on quite a ride as we've looked at Jacob. Lots and lots of feedback from you in terms of what we have been considering and looking at. In Genesis 25 to 27, we were introduced to Isaac, Jacob's father. We called him a deadbeat dad. We looked at Rebekah, the meddling mother. We looked at Esau, who played the victim card. And then Jacob, whose very name means deceiver, schemer, played true to that name. We discovered that these twins had parents who favored them. Isaac favored Esau, and mother Rebekah favored Jacob. And this created all kinds of tension and problems to the point where Jacob tricked his brother Esau into a very bad trade, trading some stew for the birthright. And then Jacob outright ripped Esau off by stealing the blessing that Isaac was wanting to bestow on Esau. Esau wants to kill his brother Jacob, and we see Jacob taking off and running away to Laban, his uncle Laban, who ended up being every bit as much a deceiver as Jacob was. And we saw some of the issues there as Jacob ends up with not just one wife, but two wives, two sisters, and then also two servants who functioned as wives in his life. Last week, Sean showed us Jacob fleeing from Laban. He's moving back. He's following God's direction, headed back home, and we kind of hope that Jacob has turned a corner when it comes to his spiritual journey. I'm going to divide this morning's message into two parts. What I'm going to call the preliminary match, which will take us through towards the end of Genesis 32, and then we're going to be looking at, pun intended, the main event at the end of Genesis 32. So let's look at the first 12 verses, and those of you who like to take notes, I'm going to keep it real simple today. The heading for this section is, I need help. This was a big moment in Jacob's experience. He experienced a crisis of faith. As we see Jacob fearing Esau and a reunion with Esau, this passage can be best summed up, I need help. So let's look at what's said here. Jacob also went on his way, so he's returning home, and the angels of God met him. I wish there was more detail. Did the angels have wings? Did they have a badge? We are angels? I don't know, but Jacob recognized them as angels. When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is the camp of God." So he named that place Mahanaim. And obviously, in terms of that camp language, it would seem that Jacob is anticipating there might be a battle, there might be a fight, but God has sent angels to protect and secure him. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. Interesting, because this is not on the way. It's as if God has prompted Jacob to make things right with Esau. So Jacob is going out of his way to meet up again with Esau. He instructed the messengers, "This is what you are to say to my lord Esau. Your servant Jacob says." Now, that's interesting language. It's not you're to say to my brother Esau, but Jacob is so humbled in this process that he calls Esau his lord, and he sees himself as a servant. "Say I've been staying with Laban, have remained there till now. I have cattle, donkey, sheep, and goats, male and female servants. Now I'm sending this message to my lord that I may find favor in your eyes." Jacob left with a rod, and he's now returning with all kinds of wealth, all kinds of wives. Well, when the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, "We went to your brother Esau, and he'd like to get together with you and enjoy some tea and scones." No, we went to your brother Esau, now he's coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. Wow. This sounds like a massacre that's about to happen. So in great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, the flocks and herds and camels as well. He thought, if Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that is left may escape. So Jacob, typical to his character, is still plotting, he's still scheming, he's still trying to figure it out. But then it happens. Then Jacob prayed. Can you believe this is the first recorded prayer of Jacob? It would appear that Jacob has gone all this time, at least 20 years after his conversion experience, and we really don't see Jacob praying. That stuns us. Is it possible for someone on the spiritual journey to neglect prayer to that extent? But I've been around and I know that some of us try to go through our spiritual journey with very little prayer. Let's read the prayer and then I'm just going to make a couple comments. Oh God, my Father, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, Lord, you who said to me, go back to your country and your relatives and I will make you prosper. I'm unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I have become two camps. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted. This is a good prayer. I'd give it an 8 out of 10. I have a friend, when we get together and one of us prays, I might say it or he might say it, that was a good prayer. And there's a lot of reasons why I see this as a good prayer. First of all, he prayed. Independent, self-reliant Jacob is finally praying. He acknowledges the true God. Sean last week talked about the idols that Jacob's family brought with them on the journey, but here he's recognizing the true God. We see Jacob quoting God. He doesn't have a copy of the Bible, but he quotes what God had told him. Hey, just as a good practice in prayer, it's good to quote Scripture. It's good to take a psalm like the psalm we read earlier and make that a prayer of your part of your prayer experience. I think it's a good practice in your devotions to read a bit of Scripture. Ask yourself, what is this teaching me about God? What is this speaking into my experience? And then pray. I think Scripture and prayer go together, and a good devotional time will involve that. When Jonah was in the belly of the whale, he quoted Scripture. And we see many other places in Scripture where this kind of practice is done. Something else I like about the prayer is the humility. I am unworthy. I don't deserve any of the blessings that have been bestowed on me to this point. And then that key phrase, save me, deliver me. Hey, the key point in anyone's conversion experience is when they cry out to a holy God, God, save me. Through the work and the blood and the grace of Christ, save me. But on the spiritual journey, there will be many times where we cry out, oh Lord, deliver me. I'm in this awful situation. I have financial distress. I have health difficulties. Oh God, give me an element of deliverance. And here's Jacob, selfish Jacob, finally thinking of others. He's thinking of his wives and the children. He's thinking of others. Hey, when you pray, I sure hope that you're praying for your family. You're praying for your son. You're praying for your daughter. You're praying for other relatives. It's good in your prayers to pray for family. And the other thing I really like about Jacob's prayers, he's quite specific. He talks about the situation with Esau. I am learning at this part of my spiritual journey, partially through some of our teaching in our small group, to pray a lot more specifically. And this fall, it's been a project of mine, not just to pray those safe general prayers, but to be gritty and specific and say, God, I need this. God, I need that. Hey, there's a risk when you pray that way, but it's the kind of prayers that really do make a difference and matter. And then, of course, at the end of the prayer, Jacob alludes to the promises of God. Are you aware of the promises of God? Is that a regular part of your prayer? A prayer like, I will never leave you or forsake you. In those times of loneliness where you feel like you're fighting the world all by yourself. Or when God says, I've given you a future and I've given you a hope. Does that motivate you? Does that keep you going along the way? But I do have a couple of concerns with the prayer. I said it was an 8 out of 10, so why not a 10 out of 10? One of my concerns comes right at the start of the prayer. Oh, God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac. But what you don't see here is Jacob personalizing it where he says, like it says at the beginning of Psalm 63, you, God, are my God. And so while Jacob sees God as the father of his grandpa Abraham and his dad Isaac, it seems like there's still distance. There's still something missing in that relationship with God himself. My other concern comes through in the next passage. So let's look at the next verses. We'll just give you a sampling of it. Jacob spent the night there, and from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother Esau. 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, and 20 rams, 30 female camels with their young, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, and 10 male donkeys. That's a big gift. And then Jacob goes on and says to the messengers, be sure to say, your servant Jacob is coming behind us. For he thought, I will pacify Esau with these gifts I am sending ahead. Later when I see him, perhaps he will receive me. So Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in the camp. Sean emphasized this well last week. I want to pick up on it again this morning. And that is that Jacob is one of those guys who always seemed to have a backup plan. It's as if in his prayer, Jacob was saying, God, I trust you. I need your help. But just in case, I've got my plan. I've got my scheme. I've got plan B. I've got a backup plan. And many of us can end up praying in that way. I know I'm asking for help in delivering me from Esau, but I'll try to pacify him. I'll try to give him a gift that might win him over. It's kind of like the two boys who were spending time at grandma's house, and that night before bed they prayed, and the one brother prayed out, oh God, please help me. I really, really need a new bicycle. And he yells out, he says, my old bicycle is broken. Oh God, I really, really need a new bicycle. His brother goes, why are you shouting at God? God is God. He can hear you even in a whisper. And the little brother said, I know that about God, but grandma's down the hall and she's quite deaf. A backup plan. Okay, like I'm wanting your help, God, but I will scheme. I will conspire to come up with a backup plan, a plan B. It's like a friend of yours saying on a Monday, can you help me move this Saturday? And you carve out time, you maybe get a truck, you call up a couple of other friends, and you arrive there Saturday, and the guy goes, oh, I somehow managed to move everything on Thursday and Friday. I wrenched my back. Oh, it was a real problem, and it was a real trial, and nobody was helping me. And you're saying to yourself, wait a second. You asked me for help. I was going to come through. Why did you go ahead and do it all by yourself? And many people pray in that manner. Many people ask God for help, and then they don't stick around to see God help. So just two practical points. When you pray and ask for help from God, you got to be patient. You've got to know what it is to wait on God. Stick around and see what God will do. In fact, you might say, well, this strategy with Esau seemed effective, but if you show up next week, we're going to see that God was at work, that Jacob ended up worried and flustered here at the end of this passage, really for no reason. He wouldn't have done that if he had waited on God. You know, the other practice, which is really important so you get your prayer life ready, in a good position, is persistent prayer. Doesn't it just matter to pray to God once? I mean, does God have a bad memory? No, the persistent prayer is for your benefit. Because most of us have a tendency to go to God on a Sunday with a prayer request. We lay that burden on the altar of prayer, and then by about Wednesday, we realize we've taken the burden right back, and we're trying to work through it. What I have found about persistent prayer is that when you go to God over and over with the same request, you're establishing that you are continually dependent on God and you will wait till God comes through for you. That makes sense? Persistent prayer. So don't go, well, I mentioned this once to God. I don't think it needs to be mentioned again. It's not for God's benefit. It's for your benefit so that you ensure that your prayers are effective in that manner. Well, this is the preliminary. Let's move on to the main event. And we're going to read the passage, then I'm going to make a number of comments. That night, Jacob got up, took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he'd sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome." Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. Wow. One of the most peculiar, unique, complicated, and mysterious passages in the whole of the Bible is what we've just read. It's profound. It has a lot of speculation attached to it. I've likely read over the last few days 20 different interpretations of this passage, and it really is not a passage that is neat and tidy or easy to figure out. But it is profound. It has insights and principles for all of us. And we need to ask the question, is this the pattern? Is this the way it's to happen in everybody's Christian experience? Or are there principles for all of us who at times find ourselves struggling with God? Fighting with God might not be this literal, but God has other forms and other methods when it comes to contending with us. Imagine this, Jacob alone, it's dark, and he gets into a fight with a mystery man. I think that earlier verse is one of the most understated verses in all of the Bible. All of a sudden, out of the blue, he wrestles with a man to daybreak. You go, what? That's bizarre. What's going on? What's happening? And this is not a skirmish. This is a fight. This is a struggle. I don't know what you think of wrestling. Last weekend at the wedding, I asked one of the Indian guests, "What's your favorite sports?" He said, "Cricket and wrestling." I said, "Amateur wrestling?" He said, "Oh, no, WWE wrestling. I didn't even know they get that in India." And he said, I love wrestling. Well, whether this fight was like a boxing match, a UFC match, or an amateur wrestling match, we've got this mystery man fighting with Jacob. The mystery man initiates the fight, which really will throw many of us off. And in fact, most of us have a rather passive view of God at times, and here's God showing up, and I'll say this quickly, that I don't believe it's a theophany. I actually believe that this is a pre-incarnate visit from God the Son, Jesus Christ. Most of us like to picture Jesus coming to earth as a baby. Here's Jesus as a fighter, as a boxer. Try with your Christmas cards this season getting a picture of Jesus in boxing shorts and boxing gloves, because that's the picture we have here in Genesis 32. Those of you who come from a pacifist background will really struggle with this passage, because God is out to fight Jacob. What in the world is this all about? Was it a blindside? Did God the Son jump off the top rope? Well, he jumped off the top, I guess, of heaven, over the balcony of heaven into this wrestling match. It's incredible. There are some people who argue the purpose of this fight was to toughen Jacob up. We've said all along that Jacob was a mama's boy. And there's some who say, you know what God was doing? He said, Jacob, you've been a wimp most of your life. I got to toughen you up. I'm not sure that's all there is to the story. At the same time, there are those who say that the purpose was to force Jacob into a quick surrender, to a quick submission. But I don't read that language here. Jacob doesn't quit. He's wrestling with God right till daybreak. And it's God who suggests that the fight stops. Wow. I remember fighting with the kids, play fighting. And I'd be wrestling with Mark, and Melissa would jump from the couch on my back, but it was all play fighting. I mean, you never want to have your kids going up to their mom going, you know, with a battered lip and bruised and bleeding and going, yeah, Dad beat me up in the fight. You know what it is to play fight with your kids. Well, here we see God the Son showing incredible restraint, because it's quite obvious in what we read that God could have destroyed Jacob in a second. But this is a long fight. When I think of fights, I remember when our son Mark was on the high school wrestling team. He was in a tournament and he was wrestling a fellow, Rico, from Catholic Central. Rico, we got to know much better after high school. He played football down at McMaster, and Rico's big. He's about 6'6", 275. Our son Mark was in the unlimited class, and that match, it was an amateur wrestling match. Mark went ahead 3-0. Rico took him down, had Mark on his back. Now it was 3-2, and all Rico had to do was pin down the second shoulder. The first shoulder was down. And for 90 agonizing seconds, Heather, it felt like 90 minutes, Rico spent that time trying to force Mark's other shoulder down. It wouldn't be points, it would win the match. And for 90 seconds, Mark was resilient. He didn't give up. He didn't quit. And he won that match 3-2. Now, if somebody had come in during those 90 seconds and asked the question, who's winning this wrestling match? And I had said, the guy on the bottom, the guy who looks like he's being totally beaten up, is winning the match. And here's the point I want to make. When you look at this wrestling match between Jacob and God, who's the winner? Who's the loser? Is it a draw? And I'm going to say this, and it's going to maybe baffle you. You'll have to think about it today at Swiss Chalet. I would argue that Jacob loses the match, and in losing the match, he wins the match, and it seems to be a draw. Does that confuse you? If it doesn't confuse you, then you should be up here preaching. It just seems to be very confusing, but profound at the same time. Some real quick notes. Notes that Jacob did not give up, but he was clinging on. I love that picture. If you've got a bad hip, anybody with a bad hip, can you imagine a dislocated hip? And the picture we have here is of Jacob literally clinging on to this mystery man. And he's likely starting to realize it was just a touch of his hip that caused this injury. And it's like a light bulb goes on and Jacob realizes, I am fighting against God. Wow. Jacob's will to win was never compromised. It's as if God encourages that. And I must tell you, this story totally changes our perspective on surrender and submission. Often we say to people, you need to surrender to God. You need to submit to Him. And it means just quitting. It means giving up. It means kind of an apathetic approach to the spiritual journey. Not at all. God took Jacob's will to win that was being fired up. He took that zest, he took that passion, and he redirected it. He was showing Jacob that it needed to be refocused. All his life, Jacob had been searching for blessing. He had been striving. He had been struggling. He had struggled with his dad, Isaac. He had struggled with his brother, Esau. He had struggled with his father-in-law, Laban. All he wanted was a blessing. He wanted that emptiness, that sense of something is missing, to be filled up. And it's why I would argue the punchline to the story is when Jacob says, I will not let you go until you bless me. I hope you've had that experience in your spiritual journey where you're contending with God. You're maybe in a really tough, hard situation, a crisis of faith that forces you to be contending with God. And you're clinging onto God and you're saying, God, in this moment, I'm so aware of your presence and I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. The struggle, in many ways, is like a parable. It was a microcosm of Jacob's lifelong struggle. What happened that night? Kind of parabolic. A microcosm of what Jacob had experienced all his life. And in the preliminary match, I suggested the key phrase is, I need help. In the main event, the key phrase is, I need you. We sang that song. I love the way we sing that song. Lord, I need you. I hope you mean that. Because Jacob discovered after years and years and years of going in all kinds of directions that what he needed most in life was a deep, personal, intimate relationship with the God of this universe. Some very quick lessons as we wrap up. God initiated the fight. It's a good fight. And some of you today, God has said, we're going to fight. I don't think God has jumped you. I can't tell if any of you are going, yeah, God showed up last night and body slammed me. But some of you know what I mean. You're going, the only way I can understand this situation, this circumstance, is that God has initiated a battle. He wants you to lose, and he also wants you to win. God could crush you. I get a kick out of people saying, yeah, I'm struggling with God. I'm kind of fighting with God. If God didn't limit himself, if he didn't restrain himself, he could crush you in a millimeter of a second. And that's why Jacob named the place Peniel. Hey, levels of interpretation are important. I've talked about this many times. Some people, every problem, every crisis, every situation, there's a demon attached to it. Got a bit of a cold, it's the demon of the cold. I've got financial difficulties, it's the demon of financial difficulties. I have no problem with spiritual warfare, but don't give the devil too much credit, okay? But that could be the case. Sometimes it's just because we're part of humanity. Guess what? Christians can get cancer. Christians can get sore knees. That's just part of being part of humanity. But there are times where God initiates. God allows a difficulty. God allows a trial. God allows a setback because he's desperate to get your attention. And he knows what you need most is him. He won't let you lean on other crutches. He will allow you to cling to him. Here's why I'm going to say this. Holy discontentment is a good thing. Holy determination to get something better is a good thing. And believe it or not, it's okay to struggle. It's okay to experience conflict in the spiritual journey. I'm more concerned about people who have come up to a level of mediocrity and complacency And I'm going, man, I wish there was a sense of struggle and wrestling with God in your life. Here's another key line. When you lose independence, when you lose self-reliance, you win the blessing of God. I got more to say, but our time is up. I just want to close with this. There's no indication at all that Jacob was healed. If I had been writing the story, there would be a miraculous healing at the end of chapter 32. And God touched Jacob's hip again, and he was cured. He ran all over the place. Jacob spent the rest of his life walking with a limp. Jacob had spent all his life running. Now he couldn't run. He knew what it was to have to depend on God. And God allowed the scars, the injury to remain. I look at some of you, and you still have the scars. There's still consequences of that trial. But God's purpose is to get you to that great point in life where you simply cry out, Lord, I need you. Yesterday at home, Pam, I heard you playing one of my favorite songs, Your Love Broke Through, an old Keith Green songbook on the piano. And let me just read this as we close. Great song, Your Love Broke Through by Keith Green and a couple of other writers. Like a foolish dreamer trying to build a highway to the sky, all my hopes would come tumbling down, and I never knew just why. Until today, when you pulled away the clouds that hung like curtains on my eyes, well, I've been blind all these wasted years, and I thought I was so wise, but then you took me by surprise. And then second verse, I love this. All my life I've been searching for that crazy missing part, and with one touch, you just rolled away the stone that held my heart. And now I see that the answer was as easy as just asking you in, and I'm so sure I could never doubt your gentle touch again. It's like the power of the wind. Like waking up from the longest dream, how real it seemed until your love broke through. I've been lost in a fantasy that blinded me until your love broke through. Jacob's life would never be the same again. He was radically transformed. Oh, he was converted. But he had to come to the point where he cried out, Lord, I need you. More than just singing along a song, but crying out from the heart. I'm going to ask you to stand. I'm going to invite the worship team to come to the platform. On this Remembrance Day, remember the story of Jacob. Think about walking with a limp and ask yourself, what's God trying to teach me? What's God trying to do? It might be a financial difficulty. It might be a relational problem. It could be a host of ways that God says we're going to fight until you come to that point where you win. And say, Lord, I need you. So with your heads bowed, eyes closed, will you just, in your way, say, Lord, I need you. Jacob was an old man when this happened. He was an experienced believer, but he needed this moment, a crisis of faith, where he could say, Lord, no matter what's going on in life, no matter what I have, what I need most is you. And I'm going to cling to you. I'm not going to let you go. I'm not going to let you go away from this moment until you pour out blessing on me. Some of you desperately need this blessing of God. You're frustrated. You're overwhelmed. And the Christian life is not all that it could be. Allow God to bless you. Do you think God could even do that right now in this moment? I believe that. So just give yourselves 10 or 15 seconds, and then we're going to sing our final song as a prayer.